afternoon. Welcome to Hockey Central. Jeff Merrick alongside Brian Brick and Anthony Stewart. A few things to go over here. Pierre Dorion, general manager of the Ottawa Senators, will join us at the bottom of the hour. A number of signings, a couple of big draft picks a week ago with the NHL's first virtual draft. A goaltending need fulfilled and a winger spot now taken by Yevgeny Dadonov. Yesterday, a three-year $15 million contract signed by the Russian winger. More on that at the bottom of the hour. Meanwhile, Brian and Anthony, good afternoon. And it seems as if, and we're going to get to a comment from Elliot Friedman here in a couple of seconds from the morning show. It seems as if, guys, the full court press is on from the Toronto point of view for Joe Thornton. Before we get your comments on it, let's hear Friedman on leadoff today talking about how the Maple Leafs, this isn't just kicking tires. This is aggressively trying to get Jumbo to Toronto. Have a listen.
The full court press is on from the Maple Leafs. You know, the GM has talked to him. The coach has talked to him. I believe Austin Matthews has talked to him. I believe Jake Muzzin has talked to him. I think Tavares has, and there might even be more. I just think they've all called him and told him that he'd be really welcome here. They'd find a way to make it work here. Second unit power play, offensive situations, still a really smart player, loves playing. They think he'd be just a fun person to have around. I kind of thought personally that when they re-signed Spezza, the idea of this was over. Obviously not. They're really making a pitch, and he's listening.
All right, so that's Elliot Friedman on leadoff this morning with Scotty and Ziggy. Berkey, a couple of things there. The general manager speaking to him, obvious. The coach, ditto. But when you start to get players involved, whether it's Austin Matthews, Jake Muzzin, John Tavares, in your mind, does that ratchet it up a rung on the ladder?
Yes. And let me be clear. I don't think this is a good idea. I don't mince my words very often. This doesn't make any sense to me at all. It's like the example I gave. I have a car. I drive a Ford Edge. And so, Jeff, if you said to me, would you like a second car? I'd say, well, yeah, kind of, but I have one. It's just me driving here. I can't drive two cars at once. I don't get it. They've got the veteran. They signed the veteran for this role. I don't get it from Joe's standpoint that if he thinks the team is close, there are teams that are closer that might sign him. I don't get it. This looks like, it almost looks like doing something to show the public you're doing something and pulling out all the stops, but it's not quite what you need. Why don't they spend this time and effort and get some ugly, big, mean, nasty guy that's preferably this is not, they're adding a piece they don't need. Mm-hmm. And I love Joe Thornton. I tried to get him. I admire him, but this to me is, if you list the things they need, a big veteran center that can't play in the top six, yeah, let's get that.
Okay, let me devil's advocate this one for you. And Stewie, we're going to get your thoughts in a couple of seconds, and Berkey wasn't referring to you when he was talking about ugly and mean. do you think that the pursuit of Joe Thornton could be a reflection of what we expect the schedule to look like, a very compressed schedule where, let's say you're going into, I don't know, you're going into Montreal or you're going into
no.
Winnipeg.
The answer,
and
the answer
Friday,
is no.
Saturday, and
no.
You do Spezza on the Friday, Thornton on the Saturday.
Oh, I'm sure that's part of the pitch. You only have to play every other night, Joe. Joe loves to play. Are you kidding me? If he comes here, he'll play every game if they let him. Mm-hmm. That can't be part of the pitch. And I guarantee you one thing, more unfairly, it wasn't part of the pitch to Jason Spezza.
Stewie.
You're going to platoon. You're going to platoon with Jumbo. Hey, sign right here.
Stewie, your thoughts?
Well, not to poke holes in Berkey's analogy here, but I'm pretty sure I heard him mention Ford. So that probably goes back to his Leaf days where he actually has a free car. So if they offer you another free car, you're going to say, absolutely, I'm going to take a free car. And this is Joe Thornton,
Stewie,
not at 2.5.
I can get a free car whenever I want. I don't have a free car. I bought my car. I can get a free car whenever I want.
But if someone offers me a free car, you know what? If I have three cars, I'm going to take another one. Absolutely. And this is not Joe Thornton at $5 million or $2.5 million. This is Joe Thornton at league minimum or close to that. And this is a guy that can put up 40 assists in his sleep. You put him on the second unit, you give him his 10, 11, 12 minutes, he can produce. And I think the problem is right now they're plugging in a lot of guys that is a wild card. You know exactly what you're going to get from Joe Thornton inside and out. And I think that was the problem, especially on the blue line. They're bringing these guys in. Well, we're going to hope he's going to do this. We're going to hope. So with Joe Thornton, he adds that stability. You know exactly what you're going to get. That's what this team needs. They don't need any home runs. They need stability because they already have the home run players in the big four and Morgan Rielly. So for me, I like it because he can come in, second power play unit, leadership, and he can put up 40 assists. He probably put up 10 assists already while we're talking about this in the Swiss League in practice. So I like it. Stability is what they need.
Did they have trouble scoring goals last year, or did I miss something?
Bottom six, yes.
No, second power play. The power play wasn't pretty good.
But that could be part of it too now, where they're saying, well, you know what, we can't, it doesn't work to put your first unit out there for a minute and a half. We need to have a legit second unit threat. So you add him, you add Simmons out there, second two, you have two units that are a threat. And I think that was the problem last year, where their top four, those top two lines, they were playing too much because the coaching staff didn't trust the bottom six. When you add those veteran guys, I think they add that stability where now you give the top guys a little bit less minutes, they play better, they perform better.
Let me add
okay,
one
so
more
everyone's
thing
gonna get everyone's gonna get the pom poms out and say this is a good idea. I want to be clear. I don't think it's their best use of assets. I love the player. I love him as a person. They get him, I'll applaud like everyone else. But this to me is a misguided use of assets. They have other needs that are more pressing, and I'll leave it at that.
Are we even? Let me see if I can go at a different angle here. Are we even having this conversation? Are we even having this conversation if there are no questions about Alexander Kerfoot as a center? To me, this all revolves around they still have questions about that third line center position. And I don't know what they think that Kerfoot is a center as much as he is a winger. Would I be on the mark or off the mark in your estimation there, Berkey?
I think that's very much a part of it, but that's... So this is a third-line center. If you're going to replace Alex Kerfoot, a third-line center, this is the best guy of all those guys who were available a week ago. This is the best third-line center. Marvelous player, everything. But, Anthony, he is on the back nine. I think you have to acknowledge that. He's been in the league 20
years. Absolutely.
He's no chicken spring, as they used to say. So, to me, last year in 70 games, 34 points. 31 points in 70 games.
Yeah,
that's on a bad San Jose team, right? That's on a bad San Jose team.
Minus 19. The year before, 51. So you're right, 50 points. Year before that, close. He was hurt. This guy, I love him as a player. So we're sitting in a bar drinking beer talking about the Leafs. What do they need? When do you get to the third line center after you list what do they need? I think probably the third or fourth thing. I like Wayne Simmons coming in. I think they need some snarl. When I talk about ugly, I'm not talking about physically ugly. They need some more ugliness for me, and I would spend more money on the defense, not a third-line center.
The other Leaf issue, and we'll park Thornton, we'll see what happens as the days here progress, but it seems as if, further to Elliot's point, the full-court press is on not just the GM and coach reaching out to Thornton, but also players like Austin Matthews and John Tavares and Jake Muzzin. We'll see where that ends up. There's a couple of other small little issues. The Maple Leafs signing Scott Sabourin to an American Hockey League deal. We can recall the visual of Austin Matthews looking at the name bar in the back of Scott Sabourin's jersey. He was a member of the Ottawa Senators. And Jeremy Bracco, who wasn't qualified by the Toronto Maple Leafs, a former second-round pick, signs with the Carolina Hurricanes. Berkey, it's a one-year, two-way deal. At the NHL level, it would be $700,000. Do you have a thought on Jeremy Bracco trying to kickstart the career again here in Carolina?
Yeah, I think he's got to change a couple things in his game. I mean, so far, all he's been is a pretty accomplished American League player. He's got to figure something out. It's not working. It's not like he didn't get a good look here. Mm-hmm. I don't think you could say the Leafs didn't give him every opportunity. So, and it might be just a failed draft pick. Maybe he's not good enough. But guy's got some skill, and hopefully he can figure it out. He didn't figure it out here.
I can remember Stewie watching him in junior playing with the Kitchener Rangers, and it was probably when he played with the Rangers, no better a passer in the NHL than Jeremy Bracco. Just high-end vision, fantastic passer. Your thoughts on Jeremy Bracco, now a member of the Carolina Hurricanes?
Yeah, and this is a key thing here. You know, when you have young guys in the American League and, you know, you have a half-decent season, you're a second-round guy, 61 pick, and you're seeing all these other young guys just come in and sort of pass you on the depth chart and go up, you sort of lose focus a bit. So I think the Leafs maybe, you know, mishandled an asset here. You know, he had 80 points almost in 2018, 2019. You know, if you would have gave him a couple games or a little bit of a sniff, I think that would help, you know, keep him focused on, you know, on bettering himself. But so sort of when you're sort of stuck in the minors and there's no real end at light at the end of the tunnel, mm-hmm. you know, there's no real motivation to play well or perform. So that's the only reason why I can see it going from 80 points to 34 points. And again, I've added a couple times as when I was in the minors where I was up and down 9 times and you get motivated, you lose motivation because you're thinking, man, when am I going back? So for Bracco, maybe he earned a call 2 years ago, but nothing is handed to you. So hopefully he makes the most of his opportunity in Carolina, but you don't just wake up and put up 80 points in the American League. So there is some talent there.
So whenever I would check in with someone with the Toronto Marlies and the conversation would turn to Jeremy Bracco, Burke, you can comment on this, having, you know, handled that organization and players like this. The comment that I always got back is, yes, he's putting up points, but it's all power play. That it's not 5-on-5. How significant, if at all, is a point like that for a player in the American League? Like, how do you look at that player from an NHL point of view?
When you look a guy up in the book, like Stewie says, 50 points on Joe Thornton. They're 50 points. And if it turns out that 35 of them on the power play, they're still 50 points. And your power play, you need your power play to produce to be successful. So that alone, I heard the same thing. And I go down and watch the Marlies play. Like last year, I don't know, 4 games? I see them when I can. If we work Saturday night and they play Sunday, I go Sunday. Try to go. If I have my daughters, I won't go on a Sunday. But so I try and catch the odd game down there. I love American League hockey. And yeah. I never saw a game once where I left where I said, we have got to get this player. We have got to get this player because I didn't like his skating. And so to me, Stewie's right. He put, you know, 80 points, with, including 57 assists, 57 apples. That's a lot of apples.
Yeah.
You look at the stats here before the game, the guys aren't, they're not on the ice shift for warm up. You're going through the stats and thinking, all right, as a rival GM, who can I cherry pick off this team? Who are they missing on? Is it Liljegren? Are they wrong on this guy or that guy? Who can we steal? Mm-hmm. And never once did I come up with Jeremy Bracco because the skating. And yeah, he scored 3 points on the power play, stationary plays, no line rush stuff, and marvelous hands. But yeah, I wish him luck. I hope he does well.
To that point about all the assists, just like an elite-level passer and always has been. Now a member, if you missed it today, Carolina signing Jeremy Bracco, who wasn't qualified by the Leafs. The Patrick Laine situation in Winnipeg is a curious one. It sounds very much as if this is, you know, headed to Jacob Trouba territory here, perhaps with a trade, and that former second overall draft pick finding his way out of Winnipeg. Stewie, we'll start with you. How do you read this situation with Line A and the Jets? It seems as if this is almost a doomed marriage at this point.
Well, I remember talking about this. It was right when before he signed his contract. He did an interview, I believe it was in Finland, and he sort of talked a little bit of smack about his teammates. And when that happened, I'm like, okay, you know what? That leadership group is a pretty strong group with Wheeler, Scheifele, and that's not really going to fly too well with the guys there. Those guys are veteran guys that have been around a long time, and, you know, they're very strong-minded. So I knew he was probably on the outside looking in, you know, coming back where some of his teammates were looking at him. But let's not forget, this guy... It's 138 goals in 300 games. He is a sniper. He's a 40-goal guy in the National Hockey League. So he does have a little bit of leverage. But, you know, for me, I just think, you know, if the player's unhappy, you got to find a way to accommodate him on another team. But right now, you know, I'm not sure who has the assets to really make a deal for him and not feel like they're getting, you know, the losing end of the deal here. So for me, Line A, I think he needs a change of scenery because, you know, he scores another 40 goals here. He's at 6'7" now. His next deal is going to be big, big, big. So whoever gets him, get ready to pay the piper, as they say.
You know, that's that interview that you were talking about, that was right around the, I mean, it was the end of a disappointing season by the Winnipeg Jets. And Berkey, the one thing...
Called it in real time, real time.
Real time. The interesting thing about it was, that was, you know, at the end of a disappointing season, and the thing we know about Winnipeg, and Stewie referenced a leadership group, and there were two guys in specific, Blake Wheeler and Mark Scheifele. And these are two all-in 24/7 hockey guys, and they worked that team hard. And their expectation from all the players on the team is high. And there was a sense that that rubbed Line A the right way, who does not have a, how do I say this gently, does not exactly have, Berkey, a Blake Wheeler-type personality or intensity. Is there a way to make it work whereby there are players like Scheifele and Wheeler who are all in 24/7, work hard, burn, 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 and expect that from everyone, and someone like Patrick Laine? Can that work?
Okay, so you said rubbed him the right way. You meant the wrong way?
The wrong way, yeah.
Yeah, I think they rubbed him the right way. I think he was a better player last year. I think Austin Matthews and Patrick Laine are the two most improved players in the NHL in terms of playing a three-zone game. And we've called this in real time. Stewie loves that. As it happened, we didn't wait later and say all of a sudden Austin Matthews is paying greater attention to detail. We pointed it out right away. And players deserve credit. When you're just going to score 47 goals and pay more attention to detail, good Lord. So Patrick Laine, who I said on national TV was a liability when he wasn't scoring, he's streaky, he's moody, so unless he's scoring, he's a wasted spot on the bench. He's a waste of a uniform. What did he do last year? He started to forecheck, he started to backcheck, he made good support passes, he acted like he cared. He actually became a much better player, a true three-zone player. Austin Matthews, same thing. Not 200-foot players. That compliment is tossed around too freely. That's someone who's really a fanatic about it. But these guys became dramatically better at it. Now, it's not enough he wants to play on the first line. So the Octagon apparently has said publicly they have not asked for a trade. But having been a GM and having been an agent, there's a way to ask for a trade without asking for a trade. Because Liney doesn't want to admit to anyone in Winnipeg, I asked to get out of there. I asked for a trade. So they go quietly and say, it might be time for a new postal code. Well, that's asking for a trade. So I think he is going to get traded. I think he's asked for a trade. I think Chevy's got to dig in hard here and get a good price for this guy because he is a goal. Like Stewie said, he's a sniper, but he's become more than that. He's actually a three-zone player. Those guys don't grow on trees. A guy that can score 40 goals and still pay attention to detail. So you got to hang in there tough. You got lots of time. There's no rush here. And if you don't get the deal you want, make him start the year with you. But you better get some good assets back for this guy. And they won the lottery, which I despise, but they won the lottery. I had to get that in. They won the lottery to get him, despite winning like 7 of their last 10 games. They dropped and still they moved up a spot and got this guy.
What do you look for in a trade with Patrick Laine? Like, you're Kevin Cheveldayoff right now, and okay, I'm going to market with Patrick Laine. Is it the obvious, a prospect, a pick, and someone that can help us on the roster?
Well, let Stewie go first, but I'll go. It's got to be a three-piece trade. Okay, so you either get back a comparable player, which almost never happens, because then the teams are like, okay, we didn't really improve ourselves. We moved a guy who was as good as the guy we got. So either a comparable trade or a package. He's a three-package asset for sure. Three-asset package for sure, which means a first-round pick, a player who can help you right now, and a top prospect. Not a B prospect, a top prospect. Because you have to win the trade on volume. If you can't do a deal player for player, you got to win on volume. You got the package you get has to outweigh the value of the player over time.
And I'm guessing that if you're looking for a player as part of this package, like a significant roster player, if you look at Winnipeg, it has to be a defenseman, correct?
Yes, for me. And if not, it's got to be here's the problem. So I trade Pavel Bure, and I get a first-round pick, but he scored 50 for Florida that year, and the pick, you know, it's all the teams that are looking to add a guy like that, you're going to have to take back some money because a team that wants to add a player of this magnitude is trying to win, you're going to have to take back some money. So you're going to take back a guy off their team that makes some money. You can't trade $6 million alone. It can't be a standalone deal. And then if it's a contender, your first-round pick is going to be around 20 to 30 or 32. And it's not going to be a sparkling asset. It's not going to be a top-five pick. So it's tricky.
Stewie, what do you think?
Well, we're talking about the problem here. Let's talk about the solution. How about we trade him to Nashville for Ryan Ellis, a first, maybe the goalie they just drafted, and we call it a day. How about that?
I don't think Nashville's putting that goalie in a hurry.
I'm not sure that Askarov is going to be part of anything right now for David Boyle.
Then we move on, Jeff. We move on.
Well, the one that jumps out at me where I would think that there would be some interest, considering, you know, they sort of, you know, rose up in Finnish hockey together and had some success together. I would look at Carolina. Him and Aho were fantastic together when Finland won the gold medal at the World Juniors. And they do have plenty of the assets that Winnipeg covets, namely defenseman. I mean, you have Dougie Hamilton, who's on a contract for one more year. If that can come with a contract extension, or you look at someone like a Brett Pesce. I mean, it's not as if Carolina doesn't have defensemen that are waiting to step in. I mean, they've got the defenseman of the year in Jake Bean, who can't crack the lineup. The defenseman of the year in the American Hockey League, who can't crack the lineup right now with the Carolina Hurricanes. So if I'm just playing, you know, late night call in sports talk radio, propose the trade here in Winnipeg, that's kind of where I'd be looking, guys.
That's a good one. That's better than my proposal, for sure.
Yours was more fun, though.
Yeah.
Your ideas are always entertaining.
Yes, exactly.
Thanks, Berkey. I don't know if that's a compliment or a diss.
We're going to hear from Pierre Dorion here at the bottom of the hour. And so I want to sort of chum the waters here before he joins us. I thought that the Dadonov signing was a real nice piece of business. $5 million a year. It's a three-year contract. Really helps that right side specifically, which really did need a lot of help. They brought in, and we all know that they need help scoring, so that addresses that need. A couple of really nice picks at the draft last week. They bring in Matt Murray. So far, like what Pierre Dorion, Berkey, has wanted to do, he's kind of gone out and done so far as they try to push this rebuild forward.
You can't quarrel with anything that he's done, in my opinion. I think he's done a great job, and I like the way he's building his team too, because I like the Dadonov signing. I think he's a really good player. They got a top goaltender. They brought in Austin Watson, who gives them some truculence and hostility, which I love. Josh Brown, Erica Branson, Matt Pekka. Like, you can't quarrel with anything that they've done. Everything makes sense. There's a blueprint. They're getting the right people at the right price. And in following a blueprint, their draft strategy was sound. I mean, I give A's on this report card.
What do you think, Stewie?
Yeah, it takes me back to the conversation we had. I think it was like last year sometimes, where you said there's GMs that they make moves just to keep their job. So they sort of make the safe move. But Pierre Dorion is going above and beyond to really do his best to try to improve his team. So I'm sure if he was a cap spending organization, I think he'd push the envelope a little bit more. But these are, you know, legit guys that are coming in and that he's bringing in. So I like Grabandonson. Dadonov, there's some questions now. Can he really perform without Huberdeau or Barkov? But again, and I've seen him. I think he was around when I was in Florida. This guy is a sniper, Russian sniper. He's a good player. He's going to step in. He's going to give you 25 easily. So they have some emerging talent. Shabbat's going to be a star. Brady Tkachuk is almost there as well. So this team, you know, we used to say they were 2 years away from being 2 years away. I think they're only 2 years away now, which is good.
No, and I think that if we, and listen, plenty of people in the Ottawa Senators have made this point before, and I believe Pierre's made it himself as well. If this thing really does get turned around, and a lot of it is going to be on the back of Thomas Chabot and is going to be on the back of Brady Tkachuk, if they get this thing turned around and start to significantly trend upwards, I mean, guys, Berkey, we'll start with you. They're probably going to look back at the 2020 draft and say, that's the moment it all changed. I mean, the Tkachuk draft in Dallas, getting Brady Tkachuk, that was big. Getting Thomas Chabot where they did, and that draft is huge for them. But will we not look back on this year's draft, the 2020 draft, if they can turn it around and say that's the moment the Sens turned the corner with those three first rounders specifically?
Yes, but the draft lottery screwed them. And if Steve Yzerman and Pierre Dorion are probably going to be diplomatic when they talk about this, but the fact is the draft lottery has to change. A team can't leapfrog 10 teams and pick first. It's wrong. And I talked about this earlier on a podcast today. The reason the league won't change the rule, and it's not just the NHL, it's every league, is this rule was drafted by their guys, their GMs, their board of governors, their presidents, whatever. And they come up, or the league people, haven't come up with it. They're very reluctant to admit that it's flawed and they made a mistake. And that's a problem all leagues have, not just the NHL. They're reluctant to change rules that they've enacted because the public perception is, well, if this is such a bad idea, why'd your guys put it in the first place? So I get the resistance. But this is wrong. This player, this generational player, well, I don't think he is. Lafreniere, he's close. This special player shouldn't have been picked by a team that finished 30 points better than some of these teams. It's wrong.
I think your draft lottery, the way it is now, Berkey, is my offside challenge. Like the way you're talking about it feels the same to me. All right, we're going to hit a break. We're going to come back with Pierre Dorion, Ottawa Senators general manager, yesterday signing Yevgeny Dadonov to a 3-year contract. The Sens getting a lot of business done here in the offseason and still more to come. With contracts for Connor Brown and Chris Cherney still in the offing as well. Hockey Central continues, getting on the Ottawa Senators page here in a moment on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Welcome back to the program here Monday to Friday starting at noon on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Jeff Merrick alongside Brian Burke and Anthony Stewart. The Ottawa Senators, clearly one of the busier teams since the season concluded. Their general manager joins us now, Pierre Dorion. Pierre, good afternoon. Thanks so much for joining us. And we're going to get to the Dadonov signing and Matt Murray and everything like that. But we've talked a lot about your drafting, specifically this season, and the three in the first round got a lot of attention. But, you know, if I look at the Ottawa Senators right now, and your background is drafting, so it should be no surprise, really. You know, I'm seeing names pop out like, you know, Alex Formanton and Drake Batherson and Jacob Bernard Docker and Jonathan Gruden and last year's first rounder in Lassie Thompson, Shane Pinto. How many of these players, in your estimation, are close to competing for NHL jobs already? It's a pretty impressive cupboard you've put together here, Pierre.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I think a lot of the credit also on that has to go to our chief scout, Trent Mann, and his staff. You know, I've had the chance to see a lot of these players in the year that they were drafted, but everyone knows in the business that the chief amateur scout has, or the director of player personnel, and we don't have one, has the biggest say probably when it comes to drafting these players. So kudos should go to him. When you're asking me your question about how many of those guys are close to playing in the NHL, I think a lot of them are. Obviously, Lassie Thompson's probably going to start the year in Belleville when we get going again. When it comes to Bernard Docker and Shane Pinto, I think they're very close to the NHL. I think they both want to win a NCAA championship. And you add Jake Sanderson to that mix of another player at North Dakota that they're really putting all their eggs in one basket, I think, for this year to try and win the NCAA championship. So all those players are close. I think Alex Formanton and Drake Batherson are real close. I think we think that Drake doesn't have much left to prove in the American League, but he has to come to camp in great shape and motivated. And I think Alex Formanton could surprise a lot of people once training camp starts.
Berkey.
What did you think of the draft lottery, Pierre?
Fantastic. We got Tim Stützle, so I'm very happy.
I know. I've been ranting about it, so I thought I'd just ask it to give Jeff something to howl about. Anyway, Tim Stützle? We understand Tim Stützle was injured in Mannheim. Yeah. Tell us the update, please.
Yeah, no, it was a freak accident, raised his arm, suffered a fracture, had surgery yesterday. Him and our medical staff spoke. Obviously, surgery went well. We know the recuperation time is 6 to 8 weeks. He'll be back skating before that because it's an upper body injury, and then we'll just move on from there.
Okay.
Stewie.
With the Stützle injury, is there any concern in loaning young guys to Europe, knowing that there might be the risk of injury?
Well, obviously, you know, I think with any type of player, and it's a great question because, you know, we always think about these things and, you know, we have to plan. Of course, it's always a concern, but at the same time, I think the rewards are much better if a young player can keep playing, whether he's 18, 19, you know, between 19 and or 18 and 23, I think young players need to play. So I think the rewards outweigh the injury factor risk.
With Pierre Dorion, Ottawa Senators general manager, who in the organization knows Alex Trebek? How did that all come together?
All the credit goes to our owner, Eugene Melnyk. Him and his girlfriend, Sherry, came up with the idea. We had quite long meetings. I believe it was late August or early September. And he told me at that point in time that this was going to happen. And I think Tom Hoof, our marketing guy, contacted Sony. And Anthony LeBlanc made sure that everything ran smoothly. And, you know, Alex prepared, if I'm not mistaken, three names. And we got one of the three. So our luck was good then.
We had no idea. You know, Brick and I are sitting there at the desk in Toronto. And, you know, the day before, you sort of get the rundown of, okay, who's going to be doing the presentations. And then for that Ottawa, it's special guest. And so, you know, we have no clue. Like, everybody was as legitimately shocked. Like, how are you able, Berkey always talks about security around things, security around, you know, trade talk and things. How did you keep the security so tight around this one?
Yeah, actually, there's more people than I expected new in organization. I can't answer your question because, you know, I know four or five people knew on the business side. I told Trent Mann a few days before. My our manager of hockey operations, Allison Vaughn, knew also, and that was about it. And we were able to keep it in-house, and, you know, we made the selection, and I'm happy it was a good hit for the Ottawa Senators and the NHL.
It was fantastic. Berkey, go ahead.
So, you're happy with the guys you took, but if you won the draft, no, I'm kidding.
Again.
one theme here, Pierre, one theme that I disapprove of entirely is you appear to be bringing in some big, tough, ugly people.
Yes. When we're trying to build this team, trying to build the right culture, we know that big, tough people are character people for the most part. And that's what we've tried to do. We're going to have a lot of talent coming up over the next few years. So, you know, people might question Josh Brown. I can tell you one thing about Josh Brown. We think he's just scratching the surface. I think he's just played under 100 games. I think he's the right age that he's going to bring the character, the leadership, you know, how DJ wants to play in boxing out. DeBranson's a local guy. We've had our eye on him. You know, he might not be the most skilled, but try to get to the net. He'll cross-check you in places that you don't like to be cross-checked. And, you know, we wanted that element up front with Austin Watson. You know, he can skate, he can kill penalties, he blocks shots, but he'll stick up for his teammates. And, you know, when you bring in guys like Stützle, whether in the next few years we bring in a guy like Norris, Batherson, you know, and Brady sticks his nose into everything. So we got to make sure we need a bit of backup.
Stewie.
Yep. I love it.
You guys have Thomas Chabot, who's probably at 28 minutes a night, trial by fire there. How is he with his development so far, and where do you see him improving his game next season?
Well, I think the year under DJ was an apprenticeship year. I think it more for his play away from the puck. Obviously, Thomas, you know, averages big time minutes for us. He's able to transition the puck with his great skating ability and skills and hockey sense. But at the same time, we want to make Thomas a complete hockey player. And I think DJ and Jack Capuano and him really helped Thomas progress through the year. And, you know, maybe next year he'll see a bit of penalty killing, depending, you know, we don't want him playing 30 minutes. But, we, you know, he might see his role augment as the season goes on.
With Pierre Dorion, the general manager of the Ottawa Senators. I'm curious about Dadonov as well, and a nice bit of business by your organization, the three-year contract, $15 million. It seems as if, and there's still some names of forwards that are out there and available, it seemed like as the weekend wrapped up, Pierre, you know, the market for forwards sort of dried up, and forwards, and we saw this with Taylor Hall, you know, grabbing a chair in Buffalo right away, and that raised a lot of eyebrows. Was it your strategy to sort of, you know, maybe let the forward market dry up a little bit, knowing you'd be able to get players on more team-friendly contracts? Like, I'm curious, like, how did your pursuit of Dadonov work?
Well, obviously, you know, right wing is not a place that we have a lot of depth at the NHL level as we speak, so obviously, we pursued Evgeny right from the start. For us, he was the best right winger available on the market, and you know, we just let things play out. You know, we were never in a rush to pull the offer. We made our offer, which was very similar to what we signed him to. We talked to him, you know, about different term, and I think both parties felt this was the right term. I you know, dealt with an agent that I hadn't dealt a lot with before, in Rick Comeroy, and he was extremely professional. You know, he didn't string you along, told you from day one. You know, I said, if you're not interested in coming to Canada, and from everything that we know about Evgeny, he's a big hockey fan. When DJ and I talked to him during the process after October 9th, he asked a lot of questions about our team. He seemed to know a lot of the players on our team, and you know, he seemed like a guy that really likes hockey. So we just let it play out, and we pretty much finalized the deal yesterday morning, and you know, either late Wednesday or early Thursday, and we were able to make the signing, and pretty much kept it in-house too. You know, for a whole day, I thought we had the deal done, and no one had it. So a lot of credit to our people.
Berkey.
Any news update, Pierre? And again, we're showering you with praise here, and I think there's good reason for that. If I'm an Ottawa Senators fan, I'm excited. Any update on Belleville and the AHL, when they might play?
No. Sorry, Berkey. you know, obviously, Berkey, I know you're a big fan of the AHL, and for us, that was the biggest thing that hurt us last year. Having a young team in first place with all the high-scoring power that couldn't go through the grind of a playoff run really hurt the organization. But, you know, we're living in a pandemic, and we have to accept it. But right now, no update. We all know that the AHL is important, especially for a team like us in rebuild and with all the prospects we have.
It's safe to say that anything that happens with the American League is going to be predicated by the NHL coming back to business. I can't see the American League doing anything in advance of the National Hockey League, correct?
Again, it's tough to say because you have different owners, you know, different landscape. It's so difficult to say that I can't really answer that question without knowing all the facts.
Fair. Stewie.
I'm asking this question on behalf of the lifelong Ottawa Senators fans. Is there any possibility in bringing back Zdeno Chara?
Ooh.
Ooh. Well, that's a good question. I think...
You don't have to answer it.
No, I think our left side with Sabat, Riley, will add in Brandstrom. I think we're pretty set. I think that ship has sailed.
Has it sailed with Anthony DeClaire, or is there still part of the door that's still open?
No, you know what? Out of respect for Anthony, I gave him a heads up that what was going on yesterday morning. We really like Anthony. He had a great season for us last year. You know, he chose. You know, we as I've stated before, we offered him a substantial raise. Well, I know it's a substantial raise. He chose not to accept it. He wanted to test the free agency waters. We've kept great contact. You know, we've talked almost every second or third day since the process has started. And he chose to go, and we're always keeping the door open. But it's always he would have to understand that, you know, what his role would be. But we do like him as a human being and a hockey player.
Berkey, last question to you.
Yeah, so Mr. Mellick came out and talked about socially distanced seating, Pierre. How realistic is that for us in the near future in Ontario?
Well, again, I'm not a...
I mean, you're at the mercy of the health, but I mean, what I'm saying is that something we're going to see soon? We're going to have to start with empty buildings, aren't we?
I don't know exactly what's going to happen, Berkey. All I can tell you is that I've been around a lot of smart people in my life, and Mr. Melnyk is one of them. And if he's got a plan that will have people in the stands, I wouldn't sell him short. I don't want to dwell on that more, but I think we're at the mercy of the Ontario Public Health System. We're at the mercy of the NHL. And, we've got good people there, Gary and Bill and Doug Ford is a great premier. And whatever they decide, we'll just follow suit and we'll accommodate to whatever the protocols are.
Pierre, before we let you go, Brian has a new book out, Burke's Law, and we've been talking in the past couple of days here on the program about how few general managers end up writing hockey books. We have plenty of players, coaches, referees even that'll write books when the career wraps up, but not so much general managers. And I do want to ask you, like, you're a general manager in the NHL. Like, who are some of the GMs that you looked up to, you admired, were influences on your career, other than, of course, Brian Burke, noted author?
Well, the noted author is one of the guys that I've looked up to. I hope he doesn't mind me telling the story. One of the best nights I've ever had as a scout, we were, 15, 20 guys in Yaroslav. It was a world junior. The food wasn't very good. And Berkey just told stories and after story. It was one of the most entertaining nights I've had in my hockey career. I forget the year. It was the World Junior in Yaroslav. I mean, the food was horrible. Now we're going back, 10
long time.
Years. Yeah. And that was one of the best nights I've ever had in my scouting career.
Remember that one, Berkey?
Yeah, absolutely. It doesn't sound like me sitting in a bar telling stories.
but people I respect, like in this business, you listen to people and people you respect. And, I'm very fortunate that I've been at the GM table for 4 years. But previous to being at the GM table, Brian Murray would have to be, sorry, Berkey, you're number two. He's number one.
Oh, for sure.
I don't think I've ever met a better human being, a better mentor. I don't think he raised his voice at me more than maybe two or three times. He had a great way to manipulate things. Hated every referee. Liked to argue with his coaches on a lot of things, but he was an unbelievable man. Like, I hope one day the NHL really considers putting Brian Murray in the Hall of Fame, because if you look at all the people that work under Brian Murray that have had successful career, I don't know how much more you can say about the man. But people I really respect when they speak at GM meetings, a guy like Kenny Holland is just, to me, the ultimate thinker, ultimate pro. Like, I was so happy when he got in the Hall of Fame this year. Guys like Lou that I have tremendous respect for. Sometimes when I need to bounce something off guys, I'll phone Lou, because I hope I don't get in trouble for this. And just a story about Lou. I told Lou when I got to the first meeting, Lou, when am I allowed to talk? And Lou said, 3 years, Pierre. So last year I went up to Lou, am I allowed to talk now at GM's meeting? So he's and other guys that you deal with, like Jim Rutherford, like when you make a deal with Jim Rutherford, and I hope I don't get in trouble with this, there's it's pretty clear, here's boom, boom. And that's why these people have had success. And that's why these people are at the top of their game. That's why they're in the business for so long. So those are the guys that I really, and I'm sorry if I forgot anyone. I don't want to single out anyone for the good or the bad, but those are the people that I really look up to.
Putting you on the spot there. Great answer. Listen, job well done. Like, it's been pretty impressive. You've raised some eyebrows, and as Berkey mentioned, if you're an Ottawa Senator fan, good reason to be excited right now with what's happening with the Sens. Pierre, thanks so much for stopping by. Continued success, and we'll catch up down the road.
Perfect. Thank you very much, guys.
Here he is, Pierre Dorion, general manager of the Ottawa Senators. That is funny. When am I allowed to talk? 3 years. That doesn't much sound like Lou Lamoriello. Hey, Berkey?
Well, by the way, I remember when I was a rookie, Jim, and same thing. I remember when I was a rookie on the Hockey Hall of Fame selection committee, I didn't talk. I figured you're a rookie. I didn't nominate anyone for 3 years, and I didn't talk for the first meeting. And finally, John Davidson said, this isn't a dressing room. You're expected to speak. But I remember when I played in Maine, I didn't say anything. You're a rookie. Rookies should be seen and not heard. Mm-hmm. And I didn't say a word. I was older than most of those guys. I was 22. I graduated university. I was older than all but five or six of them. And I didn't say a word. And then finally the captain, Dennis Patterson, who was the reason we won the cup, he was great, came to me, like, I want to say around November 15th. He says, hey, the guys appreciate that you're acting like a rookie, but you're 22. You can, you know, speak up now. But that's how you act when you're a rookie. And the kids today don't, but... Yeah. Back when I played, you know, and like the rookies, kids call me Berkey, and it cracks me up. I call Keith Allen Mr. Allen. And if I'd have called him Keith, someone, a veteran player, Moose Stupon or somebody, would have punched me.
Stewie, when did you, I mean, you've always been a talker. Did you feel comfortable talking right away with the Panthers?
Oh, yeah, that was my problem. I talked too much. But the one time I did call, got called out being a rookie was it was after a period. I only played about one shift, so I had my feet up just trying to, you know, get my legs back. And Jay Bomeister, who doesn't say boo, literally laid into me, that's bad body language. You're an idiot, and we're going to send you down. So when Jay Bomeister speaks, you know he's serious. So I actually had to, like, get my act into order here because he put me back in my place really quick.
I didn't know that guy could talk. All right.
I know, maybe.
We'll thank Pierre Dorion and the Ottawa Senators for making the general manager available. We'll hit a break. More Hockey Central here in moments. You're listening to Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Welcome back to the program. Nice gift there, Stewie. The ship has sailed after you asked Pierre Dorion if there's a chance that Zdeno Chara, who is now a free agent, could end up back in Ottawa. Nice tweet there. But we only got like 60 seconds here left, guys. But, you know, Chara, you know, through his agent, Matt Keeter, you know, saying that there's no rush and that they'll wait until closer to next season to make a decision. Is there any chance... Stewie, we'll start with you. You think that Chara goes somewhere other than Boston? You think it's Boston?
No, I was getting the Sens fans' hopes up a bit, but Chara, I think he's either going to retire or sign for a one-year deal with the Boston Bruins. But great player, great career. I think he's, 44 now? So I'm 35, feeling like I'm 55. Kudos to him for a great career.
But you're figure skating, bud. You got something going on. Berkey, what do you make of Chara and his agent, Matt Keeter, saying we're in no rush to decide here?
Yeah, no rush, and Boston won't rush him. I will say this. If he does want to play and Boston doesn't fit him in, he will play another year, I believe. He'll go elsewhere. He won't want to, but he'll do it.
How's the press run been for the book so far, Berkey? A week in?
Oh, I'm tired. It's nonstop, but it's been great. It's been fun.
Berks Lies, the book... alongside Stephen Brunt, this is a must-read book. And again, general managers out there, we need more GM's books. Have a great weekend. We're back Monday.